I'll just remind you once again, you're listening to KUCI in Irvine, and a little theme music. Darkling Eclectica presents a collection of broadcast fiction brought to you by the Darkling Eclectica. Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne, Part 16. Cocooned in fur, a rat but wrapped in butterfly silk. Marooned you were, alone and soaked by rain and its ilk. But not a sound you made till all your silk was frayed. Then out you burst, awake, alive, and under-rehearsed. From Spring Song by Lanty Adler, first published in the Beaverpool High School Poetry Annual, 1738. Dear Rat, the letter began as usual, I've just time for a quick note now, along with your invitation to the party tonight. Cam and Allryn have their paws full trying to keep the kits from bouncing the walls down. They're wonderful children, but I'm sure you remember what birthdays are like when you're 8 going on 9. We're expecting the lodge to be full to the rafters, and Corin's still arguing with Sheen Sawyer about what color the cake icing should be. Fisher gave me your hello last week, and I hope you continue to be well. And it was signed with her looping scrawl, Kylie. Rat sighed. The birth announcement for Cam and Allryn's kits had been one of the first pieces of mail he'd gotten when he'd moved into this stump. Shaking his head, he put the note into the cupboard with the rest of Kylie's correspondence and glanced at the hall closet door. His hat and tie lay buried in camphor balls on the top shelf, more straw-colored than mustard yellow now, and he hadn't worn either of them since. But no, the invitation itself would go on to the kindling pile. His low profile, he was sure, was the only reason the folks in Ottersgate hadn't come out to drive him off in the 4 years since he'd returned from his wanderings. Yes, he still met Trix in Patlin for drinks at the Rusty Keel now and then, still snuck into town at night whenever he needed to feel cobblestones beneath his paws, but other than the occasional pamphlet, no one seemed to notice, which suited Rat fine. He didn't want to screw things up like last time, after all, and he somehow doubted Light Sleeper was planning to take him back in time to fix any of that. The water clock chimed in the kitchen, and Rat realized he was late. He was having lunch with Fisher and Skink today. Closing Kylie's cupboard, he padded through the kitchen and out into the summer sunlight. A few quick stretches, and he started northeast, the forest floor dappled with shadows. Too nice a day to hurry, and the others wouldn't mind. Well, Fisher would. She'd have to grab lunch out of the river by herself without Rat there, but she was always more fun when she had something to complain about. He laughed, upped his pace a bit, and missed a step when a slight musk drifted over his whiskers. Opossums? In the middle of the day? And not just any opossums, either. Ms. Hambaka and her family. Nocturnal city folk wandering around the woods in broad daylight. He wanted to shrug, to tell himself it wasn't any of his business, but, well, the whole thing with Otho had started with an odd smell, too, and the nightmares he still had about those burning eyes and that expressionless face. Sighing, he turned in the direction of the scent. A quick look, just to make sure everything was okay. The spoor led him southeast toward the little dry wash that ran through this part of the woods, and the stronger it got, the more rats slowed. 20 opossums at least. Not a group he wanted to go waltzing into the middle of. He glanced at the tree canopy, hopped onto the roots of a nearby maple, and scurried up, across its branches, leaping from tree to tree, and soon he could hear voices, two of them, high-pitched and whispering, from a clearing ahead covered with colorful canvas awnings. The voices came from beneath a green and white striped one, but creeping to a tree above it, Rat still couldn't make out any words. He was just considering climbing down a bit when a louder voice spoke up.
"Clarence, Lemuel, you should be sleeping, not chattering."
Ms. Hambacher, unmistakable.
"But Grandma!"
And Rat realized it was a kid.
"It's just so weird when the woods are all bright like this." "Yeah."
Another young voice.
"It's spooky."
"Nonetheless," Ms. Hambacher said, "we've the party tonight, and even on a campout, we must get our rest."
A moment of silence, then.
"Grandma?"
"Yes, Lemuel?"
"If you told us a story, we'd go right to sleep, I bet."
"Oh, would you?"
A scratchy shuffle under the awning.
"And what sort of story do you feel would be appropriate?"
"Mean Mr. Rat!"
A third voice piped up, and Rat winced. Another reason he didn't like going into town. These damn stories. He could practically hear the old opossum smile.
"And which mean Mr. Rat story should it be?"
A tangle of cries.
"Stealing the jaybird's eggs! Yeah! Oh, tell the part where Judge Owl pinches Mr. Rat's tail and Mr. Rat runs squealing all the way through the whole forest! No! The part when Mr. Rat's trying to break the eggs, but he keeps hitting his paw with the hammer! Please, Grandma, you tell the best Mr. Rat stories of anyone!"
"Very well, very well,"
Ms. Hambacher said over tittering laughter.
"Settle down, and we'll hear all about that mean Mr. Rat trying to trick the jaybirds."
Rat turned away, started east through the trees. He'd heard this one before, through bedroom windows when he crept around Otter's Gate. It wasn't the worst. Some mouse parents echoed those pamphlets, telling their kits all about this rat who had tried to take over the town, how the valiant clan leaders had defeated him, how he still lurked in the woods, waiting to pounce on unsuspecting children. Even that whole thing with Otho 2 years ago. At some windows, he heard that he'd framed the poor innocent hawk for his own foul crimes. Now sure, not all the stories were bad, but the good ones were just as wrong, painting him as the lone hero who'd brought down Otho when Sergeant Hawk refused to help. He'd heard tales about his adventures across the ocean, rescuing princesses from ferocious monsters and restoring kings to their thrones. And at the Rusty Keel, the otters and barge rats told stories about Tayo Pastari, the rat from Otter's Gate, facing down squadrons of bears off the southern coast, outwitting beaver mining bosses up north, wrestling the Lord Kitfox to a standstill when the two got into an argument over who should pay for drinks one night. Funny stories, he had to admit. But still... He ran out of trees at that point, climbed down onto the riverbank, and followed their scents till he saw Fisher and Skink ahead in the grass, a trout stretched between them.
"Ah," Skink said, "here he is now."
"Oh, sure."
Fisher turned a sour expression toward him, her fur dripping.
"Just in time to miss all the work. I don't know if I'll let you have any of my fish."
Rat shrugged and sat.
"I'm not really that hungry." "You?"
She blinked.
"You okay?" "Yeah."
He crooked a thumb over his shoulder.
"It's just, well, I passed by the Hambachas having a little summer campout, and Ms. Hambacher was telling that story about mean Mr. Rat breaking into the jaybird's house to eat their eggs."
"Oh, yes."
Skink had clambered up onto the trout's head, began working to get one of its eyeballs out.
"Actually, a new dialogue was making the rounds at the Kiva last week. A fine debate between Tayo and Ma Tong Chi, the priest of the Lord Eft's voice in Lai Tuan. It seems you were concerned about the relationship of corporeal concepts to..."
"Not me, remember?"
Rat rubbed the fur at the back of his neck.
"Some stupid storybook version of me."
Fisher laughed.
"Sounds like somebody's wearying of his celebrity status."
Rat shot her a look.
"It wouldn't bother you if everywhere you went, everybody was telling lies about you?"
She shrugged, tore a chunk off the side of the fish.
"Most folks are idiots. That they talk about you just proves it.
She popped the chunk into her mouth.
Now, Fisher.
Skink dug the eyeball out, dropped it onto the grass.
We have no call to insult our neighbors. Rat has lived his life in a way that has invited a certain mystique to build up around him. That stories have arisen from this mystique should surprise no one.
What?
Rat turned to stare at the lizard.
You're saying this is all my fault?
Fisher swallowed her mouthful.
You live like a hermit out here, then sneak into town listening in at folks' windows when you think no one's looking. Yeah, that's bound to put the population at ease.
She tapped a claw gently against his forehead.
There a brain in there at all? Hey!
Ears going hot, he batted her paw away. She grinned.
Of course, if you got all cleaned up, headed on down to the Mouse Lodge and started making nice with all those jerks who kicked you out way back when, I'm sure that'd solve all your problems.
Rat sat up. The invitation to the birthday party. It'd be a start, at least.
Listen, I'll see you two later.
He climbed to his paws and headed back into the woods. And by the time the sun was setting, Rat had his bow tie tied, the thing more like a clamp than ever around his neck, his bowler hat on, well, perched precariously between his ears, and his satchel slung over his shoulder, the invitation tucked into the side pocket. With sand, wood chips, and water, he'd scrubbed his fur, used a knife to trim his claws and pick his teeth, given himself the most thorough combing he'd had in years. Good thing he'd started as early in the day as he had. The hat and tie had spruced up nicely, too. Not the right color of yellow, true, but presentable. Emerging from the woods into Ree's meadow, though, he had to wince, the light of the setting sun reflecting a bright orange glare from the windows of town just across the channel. Was he sure about this? Last he'd heard, he was still wanted by the Air Force. And why did he care if folks were telling lies about him? What did it matter what a bunch of mice and birds and opossums thought? He sighed and stepped squinting into the glare. Maybe it shouldn't matter, but it did. He wasn't like Fisher, wasn't a loner or a wanderer or a deep thinker. He'd learned that the hard way. As much as he hated it sometimes, he wanted to have a place here, wanted to belong. Living in town hadn't worked, but living out of town apparently hadn't worked either. Both ways, folks ended up afraid of him, told stories about him, tried to make him something he wasn't. So he'd try this. He had to do something, after all. The glare lessened as he crossed the meadow, till he could see the Bailey Oak ahead, towering into the summer evening, Ottersgate spread out beneath it. He took a breath, and air whooshed against him from above, the flap of wings descending.
Well, well, well,
a too familiar voice said, the scent of hawk feathers washing down around him.
What have we got here?
He looked up, Sergeant Hawk folding his big gray wings and dropping to land in the grass.
Great.
Rat doffed his hat.
Evening, Sergeant. A beautiful sunset, isn't it?
Hawk tapped a wing against his vest, and Rat saw several new bars there.
It's Captain now. What are you doing here?
Captain?
Rat grinned.
Hey, congrats. I hadn't heard.
Passed the test last week.
His eyes narrowed.
And I'd like an answer to my question.
Rat put his hat back on.
Big birthday party for Cam and Alren Nibbler's kits at the lodge tonight.
And what's that got to do with you?
Pulling his satchel around, Rat fished the invitation out. Hawk cocked his head to peer at it, and a long moment went by, Rat's tie seeming to get tighter and tighter. Then Hawk clicked his beak and straightened up.
And you expect me to just let you walk right in, is that it?
The ice in the bird's eyes made Rat's stomach clench.
I don't want any trouble, Rollo. You should know that better than anyone. It's just...
He had to swallow a sudden lump in his throat.
It's been 10 years. I just want to see some folks again.
Another long moment, then Hawk blew out a breath.
You almost look like a mouse with that hat and tie. So keep 'em on, and keep out of trouble. You hear me?
Shaking his head, he spread his wings and leaped into the twilight. Rat stared. Hawk wasn't going to take him in? Adjusting his hat, he slung the satchel over his back, made his way down to the Meerkat Road, and whistling, crossed over the West Bridge into Ottersgate. Up the cobbled street to Bailey Common, the Bailey Oak itself looming there, he gave a good evening to everyone he met and tried to ignore the double takes he got in return. He made the quarter turn around the common, and there was Legion Street, the lights of the Mouse Lodge bright and glowing halfway down the block. Almost he stopped, almost turned back, his whiskers quivering in ways he'd never felt before. But he forced himself to relax, used Grandpa's techniques to still his thoughts, and made his way down to the lodge gates, gates he'd passed on the nights he came into town, but he hadn't walked through them since that night 10 years ago when... He forced his mind away from that, thought about how nice the courtyard looked, water sparkling in the fountain, balloons floating from strings above the flagstones. Bow ties, hats, and scarves of every color gleamed in the twilight, otters and birds and other larger folk laughing among the mice. Taking a breath, Rat made his way toward the lodge's front doors, with many a grin and wave at the astonished looks. The mouse in the red doorkeeper's cap, Paul Chowder, for crying out loud, gaping at him.
"Hey, Paul!"
Rat clapped him on the shoulder.
"Latio?"
the mouse said after a few seconds of just blinking.
"I mean, Rat?"
"Sure, Paul, sure. What, am I early?"
He reached into his satchel and pulled out the invitation.
"No, but...
Paul blinked some more.
"You've never come before."
"Yeah, well, it's been my own fault."
Rat shrugged.
"You're not upset I'm here, are you?"
A smile spread across Paul's face, and he started laughing, grabbed Rat's front paw, pumped it up and down.
"Upset? Are you crazy? This is great!"
Still holding Rat's paw, Paul whirled, almost pulling him over sideways.
"Kylie!" he yelled into the foyer. "Kylie! You gotta see who's here!"
Paul spun back as a svelte figure in a yellow scarf stepped from the lodge mistress's office and stopped with a little gasp. Rat swallowed, pulled his paw away from Paul, and took his hat off.
"Hey, Kylie. Rat?"
she asked in a quiet voice. Then a wide smile flashed through her whiskers, and she was suddenly right in front of him, taking his paws in hers, her eyes as bright as he remembered.
"Rat, I can't believe it. You came."
It took him a minute to find his voice.
"Well, yeah. I mean, you sent me an invitation, right?"
"Well, of course."
She took a step back and, still holding his paws, looked him up and down.
"I just didn't think you'd..."
She linked her arm in his and led him past Paul into the foyer.
"Oh, the kids'll go crazy. You're the best present they could get."
"I'm what?"
Rat stopped. She looked up at him.
"It's true. They never get tired of hearing about their Uncle Rat."
She pulled him forward again.
"They'll be so surprised."
They came out into the main hall, then, lights glowing from the vaulted ceiling, tables set with acorn shell plates and cups. Mice filled the room, chatting in groups or seated at the tables or dancing to the music of the combo on stage, sparrows chirping at one group of tables, a crowd of opossums glaring icily at him from another, Trex and Patklin and the mayor sitting with Bobcat. Rat stared at that. But the rustle of conversation warmed his ears, and he basked in the wonderful shiver that wrapped itself around him. Of course, eyes everywhere were going wide, heads turning, ears folding, but the place didn't fall silent the way he'd half expected it to. Instead, squeaking voices suddenly rang out,
"Uncle Rat! It's Uncle Rat!"
6 or 7 little furry figures wearing yellow-striped party hats came darting through the crowd and squealed up to Kylie.
"Aunt Kylie! It's really Uncle Rat!"
Kylie laughed.
"Yes, it is Uncle Rat. Now, hold still and I'll introduce you. Rat, this is Mernon and Patel and..."
Rat never heard the rest, tiny claws grabbing his arms.
"Uncle Rat! Uncle Rat!"
They were all yelling, their eyes sparkling, their paws barely touching the floor.
"You gotta sit at our table! You gotta! Over here, come on!"
He grinned at Kylie.
"If you'll excuse me, shout if you need help,"
she said, and Rat let himself be pulled past nibblers and addlers, spinners and chowders and hoffners, to the head table right in front of the stage. Cam had put on a little weight, but his smile was the same as he held out a paw.
"Still fighting crime?"
Rat took his paw and shook it.
"Yeah, go with what you're good at, I always say."
Alryn, as petite as ever, took his other paw.
"Oh, thank you for coming, Rat. Deese,"
she said then, pulling one of the kits off Rat's back.
"Don't climb on your uncle."
Not that that stopped them, but Rat found it was just easier to sit and let them swarm over him. He answered their questions.
"Yes,
He had seen the ocean, but no, he'd never fought a whole battalion of pirate ships. Listened to them talk about what they were doing in school. One of the girls, Patel, he thought it was, had won a ribbon for her history essay, and had to be stopped bodily by one of her brothers, Mernon, possibly, from reciting the whole thing then and there. Folks came by, asked him how he was doing, reminisced about the old days. He ate the best meal he'd seen in a very long time, and the silky scent of the place just relaxed him completely. Home. He was finally home. When the young nibblers began opening their presents, Rat took a flat, shiny pebble from his satchel and told them how he'd won it from Fisher when she'd bet him he couldn't swim across the river and back without taking a breath.
What?
One of the kits asked. Jack, he was pretty sure by this time.
Just for swimming? You didn't, like, wrestle a big alligator for it or anything?
Rat tapped the little mouse on the nose.
If you're smart, you don't have to wrestle him, I've always found.
With a nod, Jack started back to the table, the other kits carrying their gifts, and Rat cocked an eyebrow at Cam.
You been telling him I wrestle alligators?
Cam shook his head. My stories are pretty tame compared to the ones they make up themselves. Kylie's quiet laugh at his elbow, and Rat turned, saw her smiling up at him.
It's the stories they'll get out of tonight that are their real present. Oh, and finally, meeting the subject of those stories, of course.
She patted his paw, and Rat smiled slowly as he made his way back to the kids' table. Then cake was brought in, and candles blown out, and everyone's glass was refilled, and just about the time that the young nibblers were losing the fight to hide their yawns, Rat heard a shuffling swish behind him, a pungent stink of catnip washing over his whiskers.
Great.
He turned. Bobcat crouched big as a boulder next to the table.
Rat?
He said, his voice sloppy and slurred.
Bobcat? Hanging out with the mayor, I see.
Oh, sure. Upwardly mobile, that's me.
He coughed a giggle.
You, though, I didn't think they bothered with you anymore. You're more the sort of thing they dump in the East Channel when the landfill's closed, aren't you?
Rat had to laugh at that.
Hey, you're getting clever in your old age. Or did you think of that one a few days ago and been saving it up?
I've been saving a lot of things for you, Rat.
Bobcat's voice slipped into a growl.
Unfinished business.
Rat gritted his teeth. The cat had definitely had one roll of catnip too many this evening. He looked around the table and saw the young nibblers were fiddling tiredly with their toys, not paying attention. But then his gaze fell on Mernon, sitting next to him, the little mouse twisted around in his chair and staring wide-eyed up at Bobcat. Rat could just make out the fear starting in the kit's scent, so he leaned back, grabbed the ruff under Bobcat's ear, and whispered,
"You got something to say to me, that's fine, but not here."
"Somewhere, though."
The cat's eyes narrowed.
"And soon, I think."
"Oh, very dramatic."
Rat made a show of clapping his paws.
"Very nice.
Bobby!"
A chipper voice, unmistakably an otter, and the mayor himself slid up.
"There you are!"
"Yeah."
Ears down, Bobcat stood, towering over the table, eyes still fixed on Rat.
"Here I am."
The big otter beamed.
"Ah, bidding good night to the guests of honor, is it?"
He ruffled the fur between Mernon's ears.
"Fine, fine, then we must be off. We've serious drinking still to do tonight."
Spinning, he snapped his claws at Trex and Patklin and several other otters.
"Trek! We're expected another bit of a shindig this evening, aren't we?"
Trek shrugged.
"There's always one somewhere."
"As I thought."
The mayor clapped a paw around Bobcat's shoulders.
"You and the lads get moving on then, eh, Bobby? I'll make our toodaloos to the hosts."
Bobcat didn't move, but Rat couldn't help noticing the way the otters had positioned themselves between the cat and the rest of the room.
"Yeah,"
he said after several very long seconds.
"Let's get out of here."
He turned and swayed away toward the larger folks' door, most of the otters following.
"Ah, good, good."
The mayor's smile didn't waver as he bent his head down next to Rat's.
"A bit of a boor, that one, but, well, must have my little rehabilitation projects, mustn't I?"
The otter winked and started after the others. Rat blew out a breath. At least someone was keeping an eye on the cat. After the last time...
"Uncle Rat?"
came a small voice, and Rat looked back to see Mernon gripping the wooden duck he'd been playing with, his eyes very dark.
That cat guy sounded kind of mad. Nah,
Rat rubbed behind Mernon's ears.
Bobcat just likes to talk a lot, you know?
Mernon nodded and yawned, and a chuckle across the table. Alryn, her arm around Cam's waist.
Time for bed, she said.
Oh, but Mom...
Patel pried her eyes open.
It's still, like, way early.
With a minimum of protest, though, the kits were rounded up and taken off by various nibblers and addlers, Rat giving little Dees sound asleep to Cam. The mouse cleared his throat.
So, Rat, interested in a nightcap? You've never seen the house, after all.
Almost, Rat said yes, but, well... Things had gone incredibly smoothly this evening. He didn't want to take the chance that he might do something stupid now and spoil it. So he smiled and shrugged.
Well, it'll give me something to look forward to next time I come to town, right?
Cam reached his free paw up to Rat's shoulders.
Door's always open.
He nodded, turned, and started for the exit. The lodge emptied quickly, but Rat hunted up Pole, asked him if he needed help packing up chairs or anything.
Well, yeah... Pole said. Now that you mention it, Kylie usually helped me break down, but she was carrying Jack home.
They still used the same pallets, still stored the tables in the little closets under the stage, and less than an hour later, he was standing outside, Pole fumbling with his keys.
I don't usually have to lock up either. Kylie...
Metal clattered, and the keys jangled down onto the flagstones. Rat laughed, bent down, grabbed the keys. Stabbing one into the lock, he turned it till he heard the bolt click.
There you go.
He dropped the keys into Paul's paw.
Be careful walking home, all right?
Paul did some more blinking.
Well, thanks, Rat. I will.
One last wave, and Rat drifted across the courtyard, out the gate, onto the street. His paws, he was sure, never once touching the pavement. It was like... He'd never left, never been kicked out, never had a bit of trouble with anyone, anywhere. He could almost imagine heading down the street, around the corner at Aunt Malene's store, clambering through the hedge at Nibbler House, and into his waiting window. Smiling, he strolled past the darkened shops on Legion Street to the school and around the bend to East Road, humming softly till he reached the park at South Point, the same route he'd run that night 10 years ago. Now, though... The half-moon overhead, the two channels flowing back into one river, black and silvery in the darkness. He took a deep breath, held up a paw, claws framing the moon, started into Nona's doxology, and a quick odor behind him. Rat leaped to the side just as something big and fast shot over his head. He whirled, kept hold of his hat, and came up facing Bobcat, eyes glowing green and brighter than the moon.
Let's see, then. The cat growled, "You and me."
Bobcat jumped, and Rat spun away, dodged between two trees, and took off up the East Channel promenade. Damn, how'd he gotten away from the mayor? Rat heard him tumble and swear. Thank the high ones, the idiot was all catnipped up at least. And he looked ahead, tried to think. Not the best of situations. Every shop along the promenade was closed. The side streets and alleys were easily big enough for Bobcat to follow him, and the walkway ran straight and unswerving along the east side of Ottersgate. All that left him was the East Channel itself. So, okay. Rat sprinted till he heard Bobcat thudding up. Then he sprang right and dropped to all fours onto the bank of the channel. Bobcat swooped past, snarling in befuddled rage, twisted in mid-stumble, and ended up sliding along the promenade sideways, sand dancing under his paws, while Rat, his hat flying off and away, his satchel slapping his back, sped for the water. He'd just have to swim for it. But there on the bank, Rat stared, almost stopped in amazement. By the half-light of the moon, he could see a large tree branch, its thick, broken end wedged against some rocks in the shallows, its leafy, willowing end trailing into the water a good third of the way across the channel. Bobcat was still cursing behind him. Rat grinned and pulled at his bow tie. Sliding it over his head, he scrambled out onto the branch and stuffed the yellow cloth in among the leaves at the far end. Then he slipped into the channel and, with quiet little strokes, made for the shore again. He reached the base of the branch just as Bobcat did. Low in the water, he watched the cat squint along the branch.
"It's no good, Rat, hiding out there," Bobcat laughed. 'Cause I can see your bow tie shining all yellow.
The laugh roughened.
And that's gonna be all they'll find of you.
Stepping unsteadily onto the branch, Bobcat began stalking toward the end. As soon as he was past, Rat braced his paws, started digging away at the rocks that held the branch in place. With shoulder and claw, he pushed and strained, glancing now and then to make sure the cat was still creeping up on the leaves. And just as Bobcat was hunkering down, stubby tail waggling, ears folded back, Rat managed to topple the front rock, the branch shuddering along its whole length. Bobcat stopped, his head turning back slowly. Rat gave the rock one last shove, and the branch came free, the current taking hold and drifting it southward.
Rat!
Bobcat yowled, but Rat was too out of breath to do more than wave, which was all right, since Bobcat was yelling more than enough for both of them. Wading out of the water, Rat heard a screeched,
"What's all this, then?"
from above, and Captain Hawk winged down to land in the sand beside him. Rat looked at Hawk. Hawk looked at Rat, and Bobcat's swearing grew fainter the further away the branch floated.
"I'm curious," Hawk said then. "Just what part of keep out of trouble did you not understand?"
"Hey!"
Rat crooked a claw at the darkness in Bobcat's direction.
"He attacked me!"
"He is also," Hawk went on, "one of the mayor's gambling buddies."
The captain looked downriver and sighed.
"I guess I'd better haul his sorry carcass back to shore."
He spread his wings.
"You might want to be gone when we get back."
"But I..."
Rat began, but he had to stop when the downdraft from Hawk's takeoff sprayed sand all over him. Coughing, spitting, he blinked till his eyes cleared, only to see lights now shining in buildings along the promenade, mouse faces with various stunned expressions staring at him from their windows. His hat somewhere up the beach, his bow tie halfway to Beaver Pool, sand sticking in his wet fur.
"Well, good night, folks!"
he shouted at those watching. Then he stomped up the bank, along the promenade to Bridge Road, marched across the entire middle of Ottersgate, right past the Bailey Oak, then down to the West Bridge and over, his ears burning the whole way, his whiskers taut with frustration as he pushed through the darkened woods to his stump.
This hadn't been his fault, and he wasn't going to let anyone say it was. He would go into town tomorrow and
find a vigilance committee burning him in effigy, or Captain Hawk with that warrant all dusted off, or... He kicked his door open, slammed his satchel down onto the floor, clawed his way up to his bedroom, and buried himself under every blanket he owned. They still weren't enough to stop the smell of Fisher's coffee from slapping him awake the next morning, but he resisted, wouldn't let the scent pull him from the covers. A few minutes, and he heard a scrabbling over the outside of the stump. His window shutters creaked, and a claw began prodding his back.
"I can get my paw through, you know,"
Fisher's voice said,
"and I don't see that I'm going to stop poking you till you stop moping around and... All right!"
He wriggled out of the blankets onto the floor, glared across his mattress at her black furred paw, her face peering in over it.
"It's not bad enough I got this curse on me to screw up every time I go into town for real, but I gotta have you..." "My coffee cures curses."
She pulled her paw back out.
"Now get yourself down to the kitchen for breakfast, or I'll send Skink up to talk to you."
And she disappeared. He could go out the window, too. Make a break for... For where? The road again? Sighing, he pulled himself out into the hallway and down the tunnel to the front room. He could smell porridge now, mixed with some of the trout he'd missed yesterday. His stomach grumbled, and he padded into the kitchen.
"Ah!"
said Skink, the lizard perched in his usual spot by the window, a cup of tea at his elbow.
"I see the threat of my presence has had the desired effect. Good morning, Rat."
"Yeah, yeah."
He slumped to the table, tried to stop his whiskers from perking at the gorgeous aroma of the mug there. Skink lapped at his cup.
"I assume from your appearance that you attended some sort of party last night?"
Rat just picked up the coffee and sipped it. Fisher flopped down across the table, two bowls of porridge and her own mug balanced in her front paws.
"Yeah, but from the story I heard in town earlier this morning, it wasn't till the party was over that the fun really started."
His coffee tried to go down the wrong way. Rat coughed, managed not to spill most of it.
"Story?"
he got out.
Mm-hmm.
Fisher swallowed a mouthful of mush.
Seems your new plan to take over Ottersgate involves getting rid of the mayor's friends. You found out that Bobcat was going to the Nibbler Kit's birthday party, so you got all duded up and went into town. You spiked his food with catnip, talked him into going for a walk with you, tricked him out onto a log, and set him drifting down the East Channel.
She licked her spoon.
It's all over town. Funny, I thought you'd know. You were there, weren't you?
Brat stared, the coffee suddenly bitter on his tongue. A minute, and he heard Fisher clear her throat.
Porridge is getting cold, you know.
Another minute, but all Rat could manage was,
It wasn't...
Giving up then, he laid his head on the table, wrapped his arms around his ears.
Of course, Fisher went on, not everyone was telling the same story. A lot of folks know that Bobcat's a jerk, and they sure didn't mind seeing him get taken down a little. Oh, and Kylie wanted me to thank you again for coming last night. She said the kids will never forget it, especially since they're part of the story now.
That made him raise his head.
Did she really say that? Yeah, she really said that.
Fisher poked her spoon at him.
You might as well accept it, Rat. You've got a reputation, and you're going to live up to it whether you want to or not.
Oh, indeed, Skink said from the windowsill. Your actions, in many ways, are no longer yours alone, it seems, but have become object lessons for the entire community to observe, embellish, and vicariously participate in.
Fisher sipped her coffee.
And that's vital in a small town like this. I mean, who are we all going to laugh at if we don't have a village idiot?
Oh, now, Fisher,
Skink held up a claw,
I believe the term culture hero would be more appropriate. For much like the Lord Kitfox, Rat in these stories can be either heroic or villainous, depending on the predilection of the...
Yeah.
She set down her mug.
But my point still stands. The stories are going to get told no matter what. All you can do is try to put the right spin on them. The right spin.
Rat blinked, nodded, blew out a breath.
Well then, first thing I gotta do is get a new hat.
Darkling Eclectica Presents has brought you part 16 of a reading from Rat's Reputation by Michael H. Payne. Music and narration were by Michael Payne. Darkling Eclectica Presents is a production of KUCI in Irvine.